This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Shaoning. It's Thursday the 11th of February, 7:48 in the morning right now. And we are nearly a year into this COVID-19 crisis. And of course, the one thing we've come to know for sure is that the SOPs will keep on evolving. Now, earlier this week, we saw reports that ministers travelling abroad on official trips now only have to quarantine for 3 days instead of the usual 10, causing a bit of an uproar among some Malaysians who see this as a double standard. And many, I believe, took to Twitter to call on Health Minister Dato' Dr. Adam Baba to resign.
He, however, stood by the 3-day quarantine rule, saying it only applies to ministers who meet certain criteria, like following a strictly controlled itinerary and undergoing multiple COVID tests. We also saw a change in other SOPs. For example, all retail sectors were allowed to once again open starting Wednesday, and restaurants are also allowed to operate with dining-in services once again.
So for a view on the latest revisions to the country's COVID-19 SOPs and our handling of the pandemic, this morning we're speaking to Dr. Musa Noordin. He's a consultant, pediatrician and neonatologist who has, of course, been closely following the developments around COVID-19. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Dr. Musa. Now, the government has sought to clarify SOPs around ministers' quarantine times, saying they'd only need to quarantine for 3 days, provided they strictly follow a travel bubble itinerary. Do you agree with this provision?
Hi, good morning, guys. The minister's 3-day quarantine period is based on political science. It is not premised on evidence-based science. And we know only too well that when politics overrides the science of COVID, we are headed for disaster, as has happened in the US, where Trump's pseudoscience has led the world with 28 million cases and 500,000 COVID deaths. The incubation period for COVID-19, which is the time between exposure to the virus and the appearance of symptoms, is anything between 5 to 6 days, but can be as long as 14 days. The risk of transmission is extremely low, i.e. less than 1% after 10 days with close monitoring and testing put in place. The CDC notes that the shortest period for quarantine is 7 days if one receives a negative test result. This is what is practiced in France. Therefore, 3 days, as stipulated by the minister, is totally insufficient, and in fact, it is dangerous. With the presence of super transmissible mutants of COVID-19, notably the UK B.1.1.7 and the South Africa B.1.351, it is extremely important that we maintain a strict border control to prevent importation of these strains. We need to very quickly immunize our population to achieve herd immunity and prevent the super spreader strains from incubating in Malaysia. Therefore, in my opinion, the exemption order, which practices double standard, must be revoked. The SOP of 10 days quarantine must be across the board.
Now, Doctor, on a similar but different note here, on Tuesday, the government announced that restaurants may now allow dine-ins again. Now, this has sparked some mixed reactions online. While some welcomed the move, others expressed that our cases are simply too high at this point. Where do you stand on the latest relaxation of the restrictions?
In my opinion, let's look at the guiding principles. The more an individual interacts with others, the longer the interaction, the closer the distance without mask, then the higher the risk of COVID spread. And in indoor spaces with inadequate ventilation, as in dining inns, the risk of transmission is 18 times that when in outdoors with good ventilation. So the lowest risk is where food is served, limited to drive-throughs, delivery and takeout. And the highest risk is with on-site dining with indoor seating. In my opinion, the risk can be stratified according to the infectivity rate in any specific area or state. For example, in Melaka, Sabah, Negeri Sembilan, Penang, Sarawak, Terengganu, Perak, Kelantan, Kedah, Pahang, Perlis, the incidence, the infectivity rate is lower than Malaysian average of 1.6 per 1,000, i.e., the risk of you getting COVID is less than 1 in 600 persons. But in KL, the risk is 3 times, 1 in 200. In Selangor, Putrajaya, Labuan and Johor, the risk is 1 in 300, i.e. twice. Therefore, in my opinion, it seems sensible to allow dining with SOPs in all the states except probably KL, Selangor, Putrajaya, Labuan and Johor.
And yet, Dr. Musa, we haven't actually really seen many clusters of COVID-19 cases among diners, but rather most have been centred around workplaces instead. So, I mean, there has to be some sort of balance between maintaining public health and also safeguarding our economy, doesn't there?
I agree. Let me look ahead. I think we need to use our digital apps that utilise data science, artificial intelligence and machine learning. This apps should be able to do the risk stratification and advise us whether it is wise or not to dine indoors. In fact, not just for dining, but most other living activities. Example, whether we can meet friends or family, whether we can go to work, whether we can reopen our schools, our nurseries, what we can do in our leisure time, whether we can shop, whether we can attend our masjid, our temples. Yeah. Whether we can do funerals, weddings, or whether we can make travel plans. We are already 1 year into the pandemic. We do not need these daily press conferences. I think even the minister and the Kementerian Kesihatan is burnt out. It is scary, you know, where the SOP shifts like a moving target virtually every other day. So in my opinion, my handphone with the Sri Lanka or my Sejahtera app should be able to update me daily on the risk of me getting COVID in my district, in Seremban, or in Negeri Sembilan, or in KL, or in Selangor. The trends of cases in my area in Tropicana tells me exactly what SOP to follow. Tells me with one click on Malaysia, the risk of getting COVID in other districts, other states. Then I am able to decide whether I want to buy kampung or not for Chinese New Year. You see, these apps would empower me, not freak me out every day after this.
So, Doctor, 1 year into this, do you have any sense of the yardsticks that the government is using at this current point to determine the SOPs they're using? Has there been any pattern to what we're seeing here?
Okay, Roshan, the WHO benchmark positive rate must be less than 5%. That means the pandemic is under control. Unfortunately, Malaysia's positive rate since the onset of the third wave in October has hovered between 6 to 9%. Bad. We are worse than Thailand, Korea, Taiwan, Singapore, and New Zealand, countries which are doing very well in containing the pandemic. The KKM, the Ministry of Health, says that it will be doing double digits soon. This, in my opinion, is a self-fulfilling MOH prophecy. This is not much from Trump's COVID sign saying you do less tests, you will get less cases. We are only doing about 50 to 60,000 tests per day. The Ministry of Health was planning to ramp up to 200 tests per day. We are only doing 27% of 200,000 tests. To meet the WHO benchmark of 5%, with 200,000 tests, we will see 10,000 cases per day. But we are only registering 3,000 to 4,000 cases per day. This means we are either under-testing, under-detecting, or under-reporting. The public health test of choice for surveillance is the rapid antigen test, RTK antigen. The turnaround time is 1 hour. So you immediately isolate and do contact tracing. So you get a rapid response in our FTTIS, find, test, trace, isolate, and support. However, the Ministry of Health has a flawed obsession with PCR for public health surveillance testing. I agree the PCR is the test of choice for confirmation and clinical diagnosis purposes in a hospital setting, not at ground zero.
So, Dr. Musa, just very quickly, as we've got about a minute left, you've also highlighted that it's perhaps not as useful to know the cumulative number of COVID cases or deaths because it doesn't give us an accurate illustration of how widespread this is. So what other metrics do you think the government should focus on to ensure clearer communication?
Yeah, daily cases, absolute numbers by the state does not paint the true picture of pandemic. Of course, Selangor will register the most cases because 6 people live in Selangor. 1 in 5% lives in Selangor. They've got the most industries, the most construction sites. They've got 1 million migrant workers, 1 million unregistered migrant workers, 100,000 refugees living in Klang Valley. And the migrant workers and refugees are epicenters of COVID outbreaks. So in my opinion, the best way to illustrate the burden of COVID is through the use of incidence and prevalence rate. Active cases per 1,000 population will tell us the incidence rate of COVID, the likelihood of you and I getting COVID. The cumulative cases per 1,000 population will tell us the prevalence of COVID, the number of persons in Selangor, Negeri Sembilan, or wherever, having COVID at any one point in time. Only then you can compare apples and apples. This is Epidemiology 101. Thank you.
Dr. Musa, thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Dr. Musa Nordin, consultant pediatrician and neonatologist who's been closely following the developments around COVID-19. And he makes an interesting point about the usage of data through the apps that we have available to us, whether it be Selangkah or MySejahtera, and how it could be better used, perhaps, to give the public a better picture of events rather than have us having to rely on daily press conferences from Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri. Shanning, what were some of your takeaways from that conversation?
I think it's your point, Lynn, basically, that we've been scanning for 1 year now. We've probably all of us, you know, what do we do with the data that's been collected? How can it be better used to flatten the pandemic curve? Or like he says, so that we know what we should be doing as individuals and take some individual accountability and responsibility in terms of enforcing the SOPs ourselves, right? So I would like to know also whether, you know, there could be engineers, data scientists, even people who are be able to use this data to kind of be more effective in having the right SOPs for this area, for this state, rather than come up with broad rules which may not work for everybody or for everyone. And it's also interesting to know, like, states are beginning to do their own things. For example, Sarawak. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I think Sarawak has determined its own immigration rules. So how that's going to impact the wider nation as well is a bit of a question. But right now, we're about to head into the 8 o'clock news bulletin. And after that, we're going to be having the Breakfast Grill, where I'll be speaking with Lai Kian Huat, Executive Director of Nishin Resources Berhad. So be sure to stay tuned for that after the news. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.